When we approach the Bible, there are two questions, two kinds of questions, types of questions we need to answer. The first is, can we trust Moses? That's just an example of the kind of question. And then, can we trust the record in the Bible of what Moses said? To illustrate the issues, let's consider this example. Imagine a convenience store in a small strip mall. Next to the convenience store is a military recruiting office, and there is an out-of-state veteran, some kind of military celebrity, who is at the military recruiting office, and he's going to go give a speech at a local high school, and he's all dressed up. And on his way out to the high school, he stops in the convenience store to get a cup of coffee. And while he's there, after he buys his cup of coffee, he goes to the front door, and he pauses for a minute to look at the headlines in the newspaper rack, and he sees a sky blue 1963 Chevy Impala pull up into the parking lot directly in front of the door to the convenience store. A guy jumps out of the car, and by the way, the car has been stolen. Guy jumps out of the car, and he pulls out a gun at the clerk and says, "Give me your money." The clerk gives him his money, and then the guy shoots the clerk dead in front of the military recruiter. He turns around from the counter, points the gun at the military recruiter, notices that he's wearing a military uniform. He looks down at the floor and sees his shiny black shoes. He looks at his nice pressed pants. He looks at the medals on his chest. He holds the gun to the face of the recruiter and he says, "Thank you for your service. Please don't follow me. I need this money." And then he jumps in his sky blue 1963 Chevy Impala and heads out. The recruiter calls the police and tends to the clerk, who's dead, and the police a couple miles away force the sky blue, beautiful car off the road and arrest the guy. At the trial, the military recruiter says, yes, that's the guy sitting at the table. The defendant is the guy. He makes a clean identification because the guy looked him right in the eyes and said, "Thank you for your service." Now, when the guy left, the recruiter had in his pocket a little tiny notebook of paper and a pen. He took out his notebook and he wrote down the license plate number of the Impala. And he wrote down, and he testified in court that he wrote down IYJ070. That's what he said in court. Now, the arresting officer who forced the car off the road and arrested the guy, and who was identified by the recruiter in court as the perpetrator, the arresting officer wrote down the license plate and testified in court that the license plate was as follows, IYJ070. And in fact, the license plate in this state, and the military recruiter being an out-of-state and here to address a school convention, the military recruiter didn't understand the pattern of license plates in this state. And so he just assumed that there were a mix of letters and digits. So he wrote down in his book, IYJ070, but in fact the license plate was IYJ070070. Three letters and then three numbers. So the military recruiter got the license plate wrong. And in fact, he was 30% of his record was wrong. What he wrote down, 30% was wrong. In error, because he wrote down the letter O, and it's actually the digit zero. So, there are the two questions. Number one, can we trust the testimony of this recruiter? Is he a credible witness? Is he a solid-state person, or is he mentally infirm in some way? And all the evidence indicates this is a perfectly credible and intelligent witness. It's just that what he wrote down wasn't quite right. You may recall that surveys, political surveys, polls, for example, they always tout their accuracy by saying plus or minus 3%. And he was 30% wrong, so 10 times worse than the limits of acceptable polling practice. I want you to imagine now that you're sitting at your dining room table with two people, this military recruiter and Moses himself, who has traveled through time. And assuming you have a Hebrew interpreter so that the Hebrew person can help you and Moses talk, Moses in Hebrew and you in English. If Moses travels through time, he's going to be astounded at a lot of things that he sees, obviously. And it will take some time, maybe a few days, for him to understand technology. For example, when he sees your TV and he sees a human head inside your TV talking, that would be astonishing for Moses. But for sure, Moses, I think, would be smart enough to be able to figure out how to use the remote control as quickly as your six-year-old kid figured out how to use the remote control. And in general, when Moses gets up to date technologically, he'll be able to function, because I think Moses was a reasonably intelligent person. Even if you believe in the theory of evolution and billions of years of evolution, Moses, being 4,000 years ago or so, was not qualitatively different person than you are or that military recruiter is. Even if you believe that human beings are the product of tens of thousands of years of evolution, Moses, being only 4 or 5,000 years old or older than us, is not qualitatively less evolved. That 4,000 years is just a drop in a bucket of evolutionary time. Now, he might be astonished at the television and might not understand the technology, but once you explain the technology, he could be okay with it. But what he might have thought was a curious metaphysical phenomenon when he sees a talking head in your TV and understands that to be technology, it's not the same thing when he says, "I saw the Red Sea split in half, and a million Israelites went over dry ground, and then the Red Sea came back together and drowned Pharaoh's army." That's not technology. What he saw there was not something that we could explain by technology. And I think he was a reasonably intelligent person to realize that this was a miracle. The people who witnessed the resurrection understood that people don't usually die and then rise again. They expect people who die to stay dead. And they didn't have this idea that just people randomly and regularly or periodically resurrect from the dead. They understood that this was something unparalleled. And Simon Greenleaf, co-founder of the Harvard Law School and the greatest authority on the laws of evidence in courts in the 19th century, wrote a book in which he demonstrated that the testimony that we have of the gospel writers concerning the resurrection of Christ would be legally sufficient in any court of law to be able to reach the conclusion that the resurrection of Jesus is a historical fact. And I think that the Bible also gives us reasonable historical evidence to believe that the Red Sea was parted, based on the testimony of Moses, who seems, I think, to be a credible figure. There's no evidence that he was lacking in any way compared to the military recruiter in intelligence or perception. And the fact that we might have a few glitches in his record, in the Bible and its account of Moses. For example, there's a place where the number of soldiers in the army in one account is a little bit different from the number given in another account. And there are various theories as to how this number came about and what the real number should have been. But the fact is, there was an army. We don't maybe know exactly how many were in the army, but historically speaking, there was an army. And that's the basic outlook I think a reasonable person like Simon Greenleaf, founder of the Harvard Law School, would come to when reading the Bible, that we have a reasonably accurate record of reasonably intelligent people. And to dismiss that is the testimony of the Bible and the authors of the Bible, forces you into a position to be able to say, well, I would have to dismiss, on the same grounds and for the same kind of thinking, I would have to dismiss the testimony of the military recruiter and let the murderer go. And I think that would be a travesty of justice. And I think the Bible is sufficient testimony to convict you of the indictment that the Bible makes against you and against me and against all of us. So that's how I think we should view the Bible. I think that's a reasonable and rational way to view the testimony of a recruiter, even though the digits he wrote down on his little notebook were 30% of them were wrong, technically, but his testimony is credible, and justice would be served by honoring his testimony and rendering a conviction in the court of law. And the founder of the Harvard Law School says that the reasonable verdict to give to the Bible is one of innocence regarding the Bible and guilt concerning our own character and our rebellion against God. Okay, here's part two. The liberal theologian will say, you just don't understand the nature of religious discourse or religious rhetoric. Moses wasn't intending to say that the parting of the Red Sea actually happened as a matter of historical fact, as an event in history which a reporter from the New York Times or the Associated Press could see and report as a news event. What Moses was doing was using religious rhetoric to encourage the faith of Israel by telling a story that would encourage them to believe that the God of Israel was greater than the gods of Egypt. But it didn't actually happen in history. And similarly, the disciples in the New Testament, they weren't actually trying to say that the body of Jesus came out of the tomb as a matter of historical fact that a reporter standing outside the tomb could say, "I saw him walk out." It was a way of encouraging the faith of early Christians to believe and to be transformed. And in fact, it was a testimony of their own personal transformation, that they themselves had received a kind of new life from the teachings of Jesus the Rabbi. Well, that's an interesting argument, and I suppose I should be open-minded, but so far I haven't seen that case be made. And I would turn the table and say, we're back at the table here now, there's the military recruiter and there's Moses, and I would ask the liberal, was the military recruiter saying, "Oh no, I didn't mean that the convenience store clerk had been actually shot and killed. What I was doing was I was telling a story to underline the importance of social policy, that corporations have become too big and that inequalities in wealth are resulting, and that we need to change government policies so that nobody ever has to say, 'I need this money.'" But it wasn't to say that somebody was actually shot and killed. It was an illustration of our need to change social policy. I don't think that's what the recruiter was saying. I think the recruiter was saying, "This guy shot the convenience store clerk." And I think what Moses was saying was, "I saw the sea parted, and I got two tablets of stone from God." And the disciples, read Luke chapter 24, and do you get the feeling that they are saying, "We were simply encouraged, our faith was bolstered by the teachings of this great teacher Jesus, and we want to express how powerful his teachings are by illustrating in a story-like form that resurrection is possible." I think they were saying, "The government assassinated Jesus. They tortured him to death. We saw him put into the tomb. And then 3 days later, they saw Jesus. And he said, 'Touch me. I have flesh and bones. I'm not just a spirit.' And he ate fish and bread with them. And their eyes were opened. And Jesus said, his presence there as a resurrected body, as a resurrected person, was not perceived by the disciples because they didn't understand the scriptures." And so in verse 25 of Luke 24, Jesus says, "Foolish ones, slow of heart to believe in all that the prophets have spoken. Ought not the Christ to have suffered these things and to enter into his glory? And beginning at Moses and all the prophets, he expounded to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself." And then again, also down in verse 44, he said to them, "These are the words which I spoke to you while I was still with you, that all things must be fulfilled which were written in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms concerning me. And he opened their understanding that they might comprehend the scriptures. And he said to them, 'Thus it is written, and thus it was necessary for the Christ to suffer and to rise from the dead the third day.'" So Jesus, I think, is saying, "I am actually here in your presence. You didn't believe that I was going to rise from the dead because you didn't believe that I was supposed to die in the first place and suffer at the hands of the authorities." They thought the Messiah was going to bring peace through war and the violent overthrow of the Roman Empire. They didn't understand the scriptures that he was to be a suffering servant, and that peace is produced by servants and not by archists like the kings of the Gentiles. The resurrection of Christ is established as an actual historical fact, and the scriptures as something that we should believe.